How many times have our patients returned to our office and are just stuck in the cycle of chronic inflammation? We throw everything we have at them, nothing changes, and even our dentists are frustrated. Rather than throwing our hands up and shrugging, we need to be turning to PerioTrace by PerioProtect. I have seen the evidence firsthand and have helped so many hygienists find this resource because it really works, which is why there are so many products on the market now trying to imitate them. The results are speaking for themselves, but rather than going with an unproven product, stick with the only periodontal medicine delivery system cleared by the FDA. And not only that, but their support team is seriously among the best I've ever encountered, from the education to implementation to support when there's the inevitable bumps on the road. They are there for you. If you want to get in contact with them to learn more about how you can treat your patients better, head over to perioprotect.com/RDH. And on that site, at the bottom is a contact form that you can fill out or simply email them directly to ask for help. This is one thing I truly believe should be in every dental practice. perioprotect.com/RDH to stop the cycle of chronic inflammation.
Get ready for your unofficial dental hygiene podcast. These are the tales of two hygienists, one East Coast RDH and one West Coast Guygenist. Listen as they tackle the profession of dental hygiene with humor and enthusiasm. Now, please join Michelle Strange and Andrew Johnston as they tell you a tale of two hygienists.
Welcome back, everyone. Episode 135 of A Tale of Two Hygienists podcast. This is Andrew, your co-host, and I'm going to keep talking so Michelle can't get her words in.
Wow. I really hope we actually put to the end of this episode the little strong discussion that we just had prior to leading this episode in.
No one will know. It'll never see the light of day. I do the final edit, and it'll never make it.
Wow. Because you
No, you're not. Welcome, everybody, to this episode. This is going to be a good one. Not that all of our episodes aren't great. They're all fantastic.
They are.
But this one is one of the most brilliant minds in the world. And not even the world of dental hygiene. I'm talking about the world.
Yeah.
I'm excited.
Miss Joanne Gerinlan, the one and only. Mm-hmm. And what was funny is in the middle of it, you'll hear her tell me to go eat because I think I was hangry in the middle of this. And really upset with all hygiene.
Yes. And she says it like that's not a regular occurrence. It's a daily occurrence, but whatever. But yeah. Joanne happened to see the dark side that is Michelle. So,
well, you know what's funny, though, is it's really funny. Like, if you probably listen to, or if I go back and ever listen to these podcasts, I could probably let you know where I was and what I was doing and why I was so frustrated. Like, you can hear it. Like, so you brought it up at RDH Under One Roof. Like, I guess I got like on a rant about people's bad behavior at the booth. So like I can always hear where my rant is.
How do you remember these things? Like
they stick with me.
Don't
because,
listen to my
you know,
words
trying,
anymore. That's not a thing.
Because it's true. And I try to, you know, hear what people say, reflect on it. And actually, if I feel like there's a change that needs to be made, I'll make it. But it was also interesting because it's so true. Like you can hear in my rants, like where I was, what I was doing, what was happening in the world, because I get all fired up. So it was funny that apparently I was just in a moment where hygienists were really frustrating.
You're in a couple day funk against certain things, but we don't need to hash that out right now. This is a positive podcast, I think. Michelle,
it is a positive podcast. It's on hygiene diagnosis. And what's funny is since we recorded this, which was a few weeks ago, we recorded it. And since then, I have seen some comments on social media. And so I was really excited for this episode to come out because I'm absolutely going to start posting it. Like when people talk about they can't diagnose and things like that, I'm going to be like, hygiene diagnosis, listen to this episode. So so appreciated.
Here's the other thing too, is like Joanne is cutting edge. I think everyone knows that. What our listeners don't understand is we've been holding on to this since before Under One Roof. We should have released it already because we're stupid. And now everyone else is catching up, talking about it on social media. Joanne had all of this done and ready to present on our podcast. And then this is months ago. I mean, she was there already.
No, I'm not talking about like hygiene diagnosis. This is just people like complaining, like, about.
Oh.
Like, not that it's anything that Joanne or anything that she's doing. It's just people that were like, you can't diagnose, stop diagnosing patients. Yeah, but
haven't you seen all the ADHA stuff that's been posted lately about about the hygiene diagnosis stuff? Yeah, it's all over social media right now.
Oh, well, look at
this, like this last week and a half, I've seen probably 8 or 10 times it's been posted about this hygiene diagnosis thing and some of the smaller groups. Yeah, it's been, get on social media more than Michelle. Jeez.
I need to be on social media so much less.
We have a much better lead in this week for our Zerk sponsor than last week. This week is, it actually goes hand in hand with last week's offer. Yes. Last week's offer, if you remember, was the flat trays. This week is going to be the locking covers. Same type of promotion, buy five, get one special. The promo code is B5G1C. And these locking covers are to keep you compliant, to keep you guys safe. One thing that I like about these particular covers, they're going to fit the ones that you just bought from last week. They have, when you put them on, they have two little slide clasps to lock. Very simple, very easy. And I think the most important thing for me is that these are easy to disinfect, right? It's all about the grossness and the not being gross.
And I like them because you can stack them.
Oh, yeah.
It just makes your everything stackable. Mm-hmm. You know, I have the occasional good point.
There's a couple of different things that you can do to kind of help with your workflow, because I think a lot of times when we're thinking about how do we utilize the products, you know, day one, there's two things that we found that works well in our office. One is you can stack these in the sterilization area and put them when you're, depending on where you're, wherever you make your trays. So if your trays are being made in your room, stack them in your room somewhere underneath the cupboard or in a cabinet or something like that. If you don't have room, maybe in one of the storage areas is a temporary place you could do it. But we also have a clean side and dirty side for our sterilization area. And that's where we keep all of our trays. It's very easy. You can just put a whole stack of these next to the trays. That way it's always hand in hand and you don't ever have to forget, oh, I don't have my locking cover. And you're no longer compliant with OSHA, or you don't have to run down the hall and go grab a cover and then come all the way back, because that's never convenient either. But having plenty on hand that are already disinfected and ready for use is the way to do it. Don't stack them up on the dirty side thinking that you're gonna be able to get to them, and then, you know, that just never works. We've tried it in our office. It doesn't work. I'll tell you right now, it does not work. Sorry, I'm a little bit passionate about that one. As you can tell, there has been a time in my office at one time that was an instance.
Yeah. Well, here we are again, and a good example of when you go on your rants, we can see what's really frustrated you.
Infection control. Oh my gosh, infection control.
It's so bad. Yeah.
There's one time in my career I can think of, and I'll be very clear about this. I'm not saying that as any particular office that I'm associated with currently. I need that people to understand that. In my career of multiple offices that I've worked at with multiple companies, there's been a time that we have decided this person does not get to clean rooms anymore.
Ooh.
You need to go do something else while we're doing this. You do not get to work in the central sterilization area because you do not understand what's going on. And so I'm a little bit picky about that kind of stuff. And all my assistants, even though they've been with my company for however long, I said, look, you and me are going to go over how to clean this room. And I pissed off many assistants by doing that. Well, I've already been in this company for 10 years, blah, blah, blah. I don't care. You will do it this way because that's the way the company really wants you to do it, not the way you think that the company wants you to do it.
Right.
Anyways, gospel according
to
Andrew.
I have a hard time being not a teacher. Like if I see it.
Yeah.
I want to correct it because I see that. I don't know. It's amazing. But, you know, one of the hardest things that people I see have is, like, understanding when you can use clean hands versus, like, gloves. And I was like, when you walk out of that room with gloves on your hands carrying a chart or whatever, I assume that's dirty.
Yeah.
Like, why are you touching any of that with gloves? Like, that should just be with clean hands. Mm-hmm. And they're like, but they're clean. I was like, I don't know that. The patient doesn't know that. Anybody that has an understanding of infection control, they don't know that. The fact that I have to ask you and it makes me rethink if I'm going to touch that and it's going to be clean or dirty, then that is a sign that you should be using clean hands. Mm-hmm. And then you should all establish what is clean versus dirty in the central area. Mm-hmm. Because I think that's the other thing. Yes, Andrew.
Thank you. I was raising my hand for those podcast listeners that have no idea what's going on. I want to ask you this then. Is it appropriate, should you wear gloves, clean gloves, to take things out of the
Statum?
Statum, the autoclave. Yeah, whatever it is that we call mid-marks. But the autoclaves. Is it appropriate to use that or not?
Okay, let me work through this in my head, because I would say no, because that's a clean service, and I don't know if you are... if mm-hmm. your gloves are dirty or not. Like, mm-hmm. because I've seen people a lot of times go from wrapping instruments or bagging them, throwing mm-hmm. them on top of the autoclave or the statum, and then opening and unloading. And so that's where I am like, if you have clean hands and I see you touching things with bare hands, I assume that is clean. If I see mm-hmm. you touching it with gloves, I assume mm-hmm. those are dirty because you're protecting right. your hands. So for me, I would make the assumption that if I saw somebody with gloved hands pulling stuff out of the autoclave, that would be dirty instruments.
Right. So I agree with you. And just wow. so that here's what it is. People think that they need to have these gloved hands to keep things more sterile or whatever.
Yeah.
But the gloves themselves are no more clean than your hands are. And that's yeah. what people don't understand. They don't understand the communication. I mean, these gloves are made in a factory that probably has rats right. freaking running around. You know, we don't know all that. And we assume that they keep them clean. There's some sort of infection control situation mm-hmm. over there, but we don't know that. We don't know that the shippers and the packagers all maintain the same right. standards we do. So really our hands with we've just used sanitizer on are probably even more clean and probably better suited for that job than a gloved hand.
Yeah.
That's my own little personal thought.
I think so too. And it also decreases the amount of exposure of the material to your skin, and we're seeing so many like reactions and allergies or sensitivities these days to glove material. So I would think mm-hmm. we would just want to decrease that exposure. Also, I want to give the caveat that I also believe that you should be using nitrile gloves anytime you're in sterilization bagging instruments, and that is all.
Hold on. That's not all. We will – hold on. Nitrile gloves meaning like utility gloves?
Yes.
Right.
Thank you.
Okay, so that's different than nitrile gloves. Right. So
yes,
I agree.
Thank you.
And I believe that that's also – nitrile utility gloves. The big, thick gloves is what she's talking about,
yes.
everyone. I assume that we're talking about having some sort of glove inside that big glove too, because you just never know where it's been or whatever. I don't know.
Well,
maybe you don't have to do that.
You're supposed to autoclave it too every day.
The gloves?
Yeah.
We have a whole different thing of how we do it, but we do like a disinfectant thing, but I've never autoclaved my gloves before. But
we
also have some disposable ones that we can. Anyways, regardless, you're right on that one too, Michelle. Way to go. High five. Boom.
High five.
There's that for you. And we need to get to our interview with Joanne Grenlian.
Yes.
We need to. I'm very excited for it. This is going to be a good one. You guys are going to love it. We talk about all the things that Michelle mentioned earlier, but also about the upcoming conference, the International Federation of Dental Hygienists.
There you
IFDH. And then, so that's coming up in August of 2019 in Brisbane, Australia. We are very much planning on being there. It's like 90-something% sure that we're going to be there. But the thing that I want you guys to listen to on this is she has a way that you don't have to pay if you enter into a contest and win the contest. So listen for the details during this interview.
Hey, Michelle.
Yeah?
It's time for the interview.
Oh, but I had something else to say.
We need to let the experts talk now.
Fine. Welcome to the interview portion of this good old podcast, Tale of Two Hygienists. We actually have Joanne Grenlian on again. Like the honor of having the Joanne Grenlian on. How are you, Joanne?
I'm wonderful. Thank you for having me again.
Always.
We love having you on.
Thanks for coming on. Yes. Yes. Actually, I think we got like so many good comments after your last one. So yeah. You're loved.
It was very thought-provoking, I think, for a lot of hygienists out there.
Well, I'm so glad and I'm so excited to be invited back. And I can't thank you enough for giving me an opportunity to talk about another one of my favorite topics.
So let's start talking about that favorite topic. Tell us a little bit about what you're doing and what this topic really, or why you started this topic, I guess, too.
So, believe it or not, well, first of all, I should tell you the topic is dental hygiene diagnosis, and it's another favorite of mine. I have actually been investigating, writing, and teaching this topic since the early 1990s. So we think dental hygiene diagnosis is a new topic, and it's been around for over 20 years. And I'm not the only trailblazer in dental hygiene diagnosis. Our wonderful colleagues, Michelle Darby and Peggy Walsh, talked about this topic. Irene Woodall, another leader in dental hygiene, brought up this topic, she's the one who had me start writing about this topic, and some other of our thought leaders have talked about dental hygiene diagnosis. And so we think we, you know, are talking about a new topic or a topic that might be somewhat controversial, and it never should be or was meant to be a political topic, and yet it comes up that way from time to time. And the reason I want to talk about this is because it is a standard of care for our profession, and it's so misunderstood. And I like to help my colleagues and students understand it better and feel comfortable with the idea that they are diagnosticians when they're working with their patients. And as someone who has taught pathology for over 30 years, I really think it's important that we understand this side of our world and be very good critical thinkers and decision makers when we're working with our patients, and like the concept of being a diagnostician. So that's why I want to talk about it, because we sometimes aren't familiar with our standards for clinical practice, and this is part of what we do as professionals. And so if our colleagues visit the ADHA website, adha.org, you can download our standards for clinical practice, and there are six of them: assessment, diagnosis, planning, implementation, evaluation, and documentation. And the second one is diagnosis. And believe it or not, it's an expectation of professional practice that we provide a diagnosis for every patient that we see. And so sometimes what happens is we hear other people say, well, you can't diagnose, or you can't provide a dental diagnosis. And so then we start getting confused, because it's in our standards of practice, but then other people say, but you can't diagnose. And so it's really important that we understand we are always supposed to provide a dental hygiene diagnosis for our patients. So what is that? And is that different from what other professionals do? And that's what I love helping our profession understand. So a dental hygiene diagnosis, according to our profession, is identifying an individual's health behaviors, attitudes, and oral health care needs for which we, our dental hygienists, are educationally qualified and licensed to provide. So this is what we see in our patients when we perform our assessments, and it relates to our care plans, our treatment plans that we do, and what treatment can we provide that's within our scope of practice. So we are not going to look at a patient and say, oh my goodness, you have heart valve problems, and I'm going to schedule you for heart surgery tomorrow, because obviously that's not within our scope of practice. Also within our standards, it says that we provide multiple dental hygiene diagnoses for our patients or our clients. So it's important for hygienists to understand that we are looking at a whole person, looking at their health behaviors, their attitudes, and their oral health care needs. And this is, that means that we are meant to be comprehensive and not say that the patient has gingivitis or periodontitis and okay, we're done now. No, we want to look at everything about that patient and look at all of their needs, not just their gum health, if you will. And then we are looking at interpreting their assessment data, looking at multiple diagnoses, telling the patient, informing the patient what their diagnoses would be, creating a treatment plan, and then providing referrals to other healthcare providers and our, obviously our employer, our dentists, and other dentists who might be specialists that would, you know, be able to provide additional care for the patient. So it's meant to be very comprehensive and very global in perspective for giving patients that important care that they need. What I like about this is when you think about it, it's health behaviors. Think about our patients who aren't always aware of their oral health needs or understanding oral health education. Maybe they don't even realize that they don't know everything that they need to know about how to care for their body and their mouth. And attitudes, think about the attitudes that patients present with. Maybe they do need smoking cessation or some other motivation for caring for themselves, but they need attitude is part of that process, and that is a part of the diagnosis, and we don't think about incorporating that as part of a diagnosis, and yet we are preventive specialists and we are educational specialists, so that all has to be part of our diagnosis. So when I work with my students and with my colleagues, and I teach continuing education courses on incorporating dental hygiene diagnosis in practice, I try to give a great example of this, and I use caries because there are lots of healthcare providers who address caries now. It isn't just in dentistry anymore. And I talk about, well, where do we fit in with caries? Can we say the word caries? Because if you talk to some people, they will say, no, that's a dental diagnosis, but it's also a dental hygiene diagnosis. But where do we fit in? Where's our framework for what's within our scope of practice? And let's think about that for just a minute. As a hygienist, what are the services that you provide in relation to caries? Well, we provide oral health education. We help our patients understand what is their caries risk. We provide fluoride treatments. We provide sealants and minimally invasive procedures. But what we don't do is advanced restorative procedures. We are not providing crown and bridge work. We aren't providing implants. We aren't taking the steps that are out of our scope of practice. So we understand we can have a diagnosis that fits within our parameters and our scope of practice. And that's what I love about this. So there's great resources for us on this, and I think it's really important that we think about, you know, what are some great examples of diagnostic terminology that's appropriate for what we do in our professional world? Let me give you a chance to digest that.
I feel like on my end of it,
I'm actually ashamed that I don't have a pen and paper in my hand right now. Oh, Andrew, way to one up me.
Way to be taking notes, Andrew. Okay, so a lot of this kind of goes back to, well, in theory, that all sounds great, Joanne. However, in practice, if I feel like even our educators, even everyone at the state level has always drilled into me, Andrew, you're not allowed to diagnose. You're not allowed to diagnose. You mentioned earlier that it was not originally intended to be heavily politicized, but it really has been for so long about who's stepping on whose turf. So if we're taking caries, for example, what makes me allowed to say, yes, that's a carious lesion, or no, that's not a carious lesion, as far as the hygiene diagnosis goes?
So what allows you to say that is that it's within your scope of practice to provide treatment for that particular condition. So as I just said to you, you have to follow what is within your scope of practice. What is within, remember the definition, what you are educationally qualified and licensed to provide. And you are educationally qualified to perform oral health education, caries risk assessment, fluoride treatments, sealants, preventive education, and minimally invasive procedures. All of those things you are educationally qualified and licensed to provide. And that's what makes you allowed to do that. Remember, nurses are diagnosing caries and providing sealants. Physicians are doing the same thing. In some states, moms are too. So why are you any different?
Well, I guess I would go back to, is that what it really, in my state's rules and regulations, does it really say I'm allowed to do that, I guess? So what you're saying is, like, for everyone across the U.S., we're all allowed to do that.
So here's another thing that might grab you for a minute, and you have to think about these things. One profession cannot tell another profession that they cannot follow their standards of practice. Because a judge is going to ask you, what is your professional standards of practice and did you follow them? And another profession cannot tell you that you can't do that. They can tell you you cannot do their things, but they cannot tell you you're not allowed to do your professional standards of practice. It's a very interesting distinction.
And so are you saying that dentists are a different profession than dental hygienists in this
particular? That's correct.
Okay.
That's correct. So there's an interesting thing, too, I want you to know that is going to come out in the August issue of the Journal of Dental Hygiene. Myself and three colleagues of mine conducted a study of dental hygiene educators, clinic educators in entry-level dental hygiene programs. And we asked them, are you teaching dental hygiene diagnosis? And what concepts are you teaching? And what are the outcomes that you're teaching in relation to this? And we had the most amazing response. You know, nowadays when you do surveys, everybody's surveyed to death. You know, nobody wants to fill out a survey anymore. They're tired of doing surveys. And so if you get a 30% response rate, you're doing really well. So we surveyed all of the dental hygiene entry-level programs, and except our own at Idaho State University. And we got a 59% response rate. This was great. Lots of people wanted to participate in this study. And what we can tell you is that 98% of the respondents said that they teach the dental hygiene process of care, including dental hygiene diagnosis, and they always require students to write a dental hygiene diagnosis statement for their patients, and that formulating a dental hygiene diagnosis results in improved patient outcomes and increases the dental hygienist's accountability in patient care. And so, while, you know, of course, when I went to hygiene school in the dark ages, this was not done. And maybe when you went to hygiene school, you were told you can't diagnose. But in 2016, this is being taught in dental hygiene programs, and students are learning that this is an important part of what they do. And so it's a little bit different from maybe when we were in hygiene school and we were more influenced and taught, you know, you might know what you're seeing, but you can't say what you're seeing. Hmm. And you certainly can't tell your patients what they're finding. But more interestingly, my colleagues and I did, now that was a quantitative study. We then did a follow-up qualitative study of a select group of dental hygienists, and we did interviews and asked them to tell us about their experiences with dental hygiene diagnosis. And the results of that study were even more fascinating because these were hygienists who had been in practice for a period of time. And we asked them about their experiences. And some of them said, like you, I was told I can't diagnose, or I'm in a state where we're told we can't diagnose. And others are in states where they have independent practice, and some are in just general practice settings. But all of them said they diagnose. And all of them said that it provides patients with the opportunity to have better patient outcomes. It provides them with an opportunity to increase patient trust, to have interprofessional communication increasing between the dentist and the hygienist, that the dentist expects them to perform a diagnosis. They count on them to diagnose their patients and to formulate a treatment plan. And there was many positive benefits and outcomes of them doing that. And so it was really interesting to see how they perceived this. And they said so many times they might have been taught some of these skills, but that their diagnostic skills increased when they were in practice. And many times it was the dentist who taught them or gave them increased opportunities to gain better skills as a diagnostician, working together and collaborating as practitioners. So it's really fascinating to hear these experiences of practitioners and their growth as diagnosticians over time, working in practice and working with patients. So I love this concept. I really do enjoy it. And how hygienists are not always so intimidated by the idea of diagnosis. It's just unfortunate that there's misunderstanding about the word. The word itself is what brings up fear, I think, for some. And I think that notion of one person telling another that you can't do something without understanding that we are trying to be the best practitioners that we can be and provide the best care to our patients. And we can't provide treatment without a diagnosis. It doesn't make any sense to do that unless we have a diagnosis that fits within our scope of practice. So there's some really good examples of that. My colleague Darlene Swigert and I wrote an article in the September 2015 issue of Dimensions of Dental Hygiene called Implementing Dental Hygiene Diagnosis into Practice, and we actually have an operatory chart model that we provide for our colleagues so that you can see examples of word choices for diagnosis and kinds of ways of expressing diagnosis that fit within our scope of practice. And so you can see what multiple diagnoses might look like. And we're actually just updating that article as we speak right now because there's a new periodontal classification system that came out. And we thought of other options for how to present a diagnosis that we thought we would present in some case studies so that it's easier for our, practitioners to see how you can incorporate diagnosis into your everyday practice. We really think it's important that hygienists look at their patients carefully and see them in a way that allows them to see there's more to those patients than caries and periodontal disease, by the way, and make sure that they represent that and document that. I'm talking to my patients about many different things, and I'm providing care for many aspects of that patient's oral health care needs and attitudes and behaviors.
I'm hearing all the things you're saying, and I'm like, duh. I mean, it's like the core of our profession, right? But I'm thinking back if this was a part of my personal curriculum and in hygiene school and if my students would actually take this concept and actually use it. And you've mentioned on the last podcast that you approach your education, your curriculum a little bit different because it's not a focus on get that calculus. Can you feel it? Can you get it? You know, it's not search and destroy. It's definitely more of a comprehensive critical thinking approach. And I'm wondering if we as a educational team or, you know, educators in our programs, we don't all approach it as this is one of the more important parts of our profession. It's not the search and destroy of calculus. It's the teach. It's the looking at the patient as a whole. It's the properly diagnosing so then we can move forward. If the students would take, you know, like if they were right now, if they would take that and run with it, or if they would just still be so ingrained that they need to, I have to find the calculus. That's what gets me my A. That's a, if I don't get that calculus off, I won't pass kind of thing. Does that make sense? I know I might be rambling right now. I've been traveling all weekend. So.
No, it does make sense. But I think we have to remember that we should be stewards for our students and teach them all aspects of standards of clinical practice and help them recognize that this is a wonderful opportunity to see our patients in a new light. And you're right, Michelle, it's not just about the calculus or, you know, the points associated with removing the calculus, but looking at the assessments that we do and seeing if we can identify what are the major needs of the patient based on the assessment. And, you know, did I see that my patient presented with signs and symptoms of systemic health that might influence their oral health? And how would I capture that? And would my patient be at risk for a medical emergency while they are in my chair? And how would I capture that? Because that is a diagnosis. And might my patient be at risk for infection? And how would I capture that? Because that is a diagnosis. And what are my oral health signs and symptoms that I need to pay attention to? You know, what are the many facets related to that that are part of the care that I will be providing besides caries and periodontal disease? And how will I capture that? Are there cultural factors? Are there societal factors? Are there, you know, transportation factors, because all of those things will be important and will impact my ability to provide care. And those are part of my diagnosis. So I have to represent them. What about if my patient has special needs and has a caregiver, and how am I weaving that into the fabric of my diagnosis? Because those things are important, and I have to be able to show that in my care plan. So have I captured those things? You know, I often have liked to point out the systemic health side as much as the oral health side, because sometimes students and faculty will say, but that's not part of it. That can't be part of it. And I say, but it is part of it, because we're going to administer local anesthesia. And if my patient has hypertension or a cardiac problem or a lung problem, and I'm now going to put chemicals in their body, don't we have to decide what is a safe dose to address those things? So is my patient at risk for a problem or a potential medical emergency? And that's part of my diagnosis. So I have to address those things if I'm planning to administer local anesthesia. Or I have a patient who has diabetes. Well, that is part of my diagnosis, because might my patient be at risk for hypoglycemia? Or might my patient have oral health findings that might be associated with that systemic health condition? So putting those pieces together are important for my care plan, and they are part of my diagnosis. So again, having a broad picture helps me make good decisions, and that's all part of it. So one part is coming up with a diagnosis and making decisions about what have I found based on signs and symptoms of this patient. And the other part of it is called management reasoning, and that's associated with the treatment plan. So this is all very sophisticated, and we have to acknowledge that this process, this decision-making, this critical thinking, this reasoning process must occur prior to picking up any curette instrument and removing calculus. And I would give students far more points for that than calculus removal.
The search and destroy of destroying of calculus.
Although that's important, I'm not saying that's not important. Mm-hmm. I'm just saying all of that reasoning and clinical decision making is a critical processing function that has to occur.
But I don't think that we can also realistically expect students to be able to comprehend everything in 2 years. And I think that we as a profession need to figure out a way to mentor, teach, train all these new graduates when they're coming in, like how to continue upon their foundational knowledge that they've already learned. Because it is comprehensive. It's really complex. Like you're sitting there trying to figure out, like, I have a test coming up tomorrow and the next day and the next day and the next day in 8 different subjects, and you're doing everything you can to retain and survive. But a lot of time it just gets committed to short-term memory. And I feel like that's where we're also kind of failing a little bit as a profession, is not being stewards of these new grads while we do a good job, maybe, or a better job with the students.
Well, Andrew, I think you bring up a wonderful point, because really we should be looking at how do we foster advanced diagnostic decision making and management reasoning and all of these skills as a student progresses from student to professional, and how do we, you know, continue that. And, you know, there are study clubs and there are staff meetings and there are those things, and those are great opportunities. But I think if we had a more formalized mechanism to, you know, develop that and to continue that process, it really would be wonderful. If we did that on a regular basis, that would be outstanding.
I think Michelle's going to work on that.
Well, you know what I like about this, and I'm going to try to keep up myself in a calm manner, because I feel like we have
I already like it.
Joanne, that is just like just the soothing, easygoing, gets her point across, and then I'm going to try really not to be that wild and out person right now. But what I like about this is that it feels like the answer to all the things that frustrate me about hygienists. And those are this inability to have a conversation with other professionals with your ability to use critical thinking. The knowledge that you have about that patient in that chair is important and it's valuable. So don't call the orthopedist and they'll be like, oh, the receptionist told me I have to pre-med for life. I'm like, but did you have a conversation with them? Or, you know, they just got done, had a heart attack, and the surgeon said 1 year, they can't be seen for a year to have a dental prophylaxis or a periodontal maintenance. Can you call and have a conversation about the patient in your chair and what they have and your concerns and what you can do for that patient? Or even, like you brought up, caries or perio management. Can you have a conversation with your referring practices about the person in the chair and what you're concerned about and what your particular care will be versus what their care will be? I just feel like it would set the stage for so many things in our profession, and also alleviate contention and this I'm just a hygienist, I'm just going to scale teeth kind of mentality, because we are looking at them so comprehensively. And before we put that scaler to the tooth, which is what we all, which patients only see us as, right, like the teeth cleaners, so before we ever do that, we are doing we're being healthcare providers. Again, I feel like I might be rambling because I'm super hungry, but did that make sense?
I made
perfect. Put some food in your mouth, first of all, and
it's
eat
like sitting
while
over
we're
here looking at me.
Because you need your nourishment, and that's important for you. But the interesting thing that we found in our qualitative study is that hygienists are doing exactly that. They are talking with their patients and with other healthcare providers, and they are making referrals to many healthcare providers. You would be amazed at the variety of healthcare providers they are making referrals to, and be really proud of the hygienists that we spoke with, and excited by it as well, because they are referring patients to registered dietitians and exercise physiologists and sleep apnea specialists and cancer specialists and all kinds of individuals out way beyond, you know, our typical, what we think of as the typical or the norm, and as well as many dental specialists. And they are really thinking, and they're talking and educating their patients and saying things like, I see erosion in your mouth, and I think we need to address this very carefully because there's more going on here than what meets the eye. And let's talk about those GI symptoms you've been having for a while. Somehow we have to address this further. I don't think we have hit the mark on everything that's going on with you. And, you know, these are signs of a more serious problem. And really taking on some of the health issues, pardon the phone in the background, taking on some of the phone issues, I mean, the health issues that the person is having. So they're talking with their patients, and patients are really responding to the level of education from the hygienist and not looking at them at all as teeth cleaners. Although they may have come in with that perception, they're forming a different relationship with their hygienist than they ever had before. And they're seeing the hygienist as someone who is a partner in their health and taking charge of some of their health issues that maybe nobody was addressing before. It's a different level of care. And so for myself and my colleagues looking at this particular research, we were really excited by this. There were some patients who, one of the comments was they were shocked that no one had talked to them about this before, or no one had addressed these concerns before. And it was sort of an interesting experience for them to have their hygienist bring up these health concerns. And you know that happens where, you know, the hygienist will say, I'm seeing something and I think it needs to be addressed. And you know that has happened. And nobody else has pointed that problem out before. And it's the hygienist who says, I think we need to take this a step further. So it is happening. And my personal belief is that the more hygienists work with a sense of independence, the more accountable and responsible they will be, and the more they will get away from that mindset of, I am a teeth cleaner, which is so vital. I think we have got to get away from that and begin to recognize that we are healthcare providers, and with that comes responsibility for the care that we render.
So
we got the cape to the world for sure.
How do we get that message out there? Like what's our part in all of this to get that bigger discussion being had?
I think hygienists have to take the time to reflect on why they are who they are and what they are doing. Because no matter what, no matter where you went to school, it does not matter to me if you if you went to a proprietary school, a community college, a baccalaureate program, it doesn't matter to me if you went on for advanced degrees. At some point, you have to make a decision about who is responsible for the care you're providing and who is responsible for that license that you hold. And you have to go to a meeting or go somewhere where that conversation is had by everyone in the room and talk about who's responsible. Because too often we are willing to hand that responsibility over to somebody else, and it's probably the person who's handing a paycheck to us. And that is a myth. It's just a myth. We are, when a person sits in our chair, we are the ones who bear responsibility for that person, and only us, no one else. It doesn't matter if there are physicians down the hallway, oral surgeons in some other room, restorative dentists who are our bosses. It does not matter. We are the ones who are responsible for the patients in our chair. We are the decision makers for that person. We hold their lives in our hands, and we are accountable for everything that we do and everything that we don't do. So if we provide substandard care because we turn our brains off and we are robots removing calculus, we are responsible. And if we turn our light bulbs on and we really pay attention to what our patients are saying and not saying to us, and we probe during our assessments, and we really think about the assessments we're doing, and we offer greater assessments, and we put all those pictures together and summarize those findings and inform our patients of our findings, we are providing a different level of care. And if we then offer our patients additional services besides scaling and root planing, we are providing a different level of care. We are in charge of making those decisions about what is appropriate care within our scope of practice. And when we find our patients need more, our responsibility is to provide referrals or recommend referrals to our boss, to other dentists, to other healthcare providers. And that is what we agree to do as healthcare providers. And when we don't do that, we are also responsible. We hold a license. We said, this is what we agree to do as a licensed healthcare provider. But somewhere along the way, we have to reconcile what that really means.
Well, for the audience, I did eat, and I feel better. I think I was hangry for a moment. And I would also like for you just to come on weekly and do, like, these empowering messages. Like, 1 minute, you are the best. You are a healthcare provider. Like,
you are educated. You can do this. You know what's going on.
Messages from Joanne.
Yeah. Well, I love it.
Well, can I just say, I believe that hygienists do this. Many of them are exactly that outstanding person and deserve to be congratulated and applauded for being the wonderful healthcare providers that they are, and I implicitly trust them and value them for doing exactly that. Let's face it, there are times, don't we all shut off? I mean, don't you just want to? And you need to, and you have those moments, and we do know there are a few out there who need to take a break, but there are many who are just truly remarkable and go way above and beyond to make sure that their patients get outstanding care. And isn't that what we think is so special about hygienists for doing that? And then there are times where there are some who scale, who aren't teeth cleaners, and that's the frustrating part too.
Can you repeat for us one more time? You mentioned a few of the articles where that chart, the model thing is.
Yes. I'm so delighted to do that. And know that there'll be another one coming out soon as well. So my colleague Darlene Swigert and myself, we published Implementing Dental Hygiene Diagnosis into Practice. It's the September 2015 issue of Dimensions of Dental Hygiene. And we hope to have a new and improved version coming out this year as well. In Dimensions of Dental Hygiene, another operatory chart model will be available in that article.
That will be exciting. And we'll post on show notes and try to link it in every place that we can. So,
well, thank you. That's great.
Well, of course. No, it's helping us. It's helping our profession. So there was one other thing that we were going to talk about tonight, and that was, well, I would like to give you both an FYI that, so I am a part of this deal saving website. Andrew gave me one, and then I'm on a part of another one for like airline prices. And recently I've been getting these ones for Australia for 2019.
Oh.
Yeah. So a little segue into what we're talking about is the International Federation of Dental Hygiene. Is that correct? International, Federation of Dental Hygiene.
Mm-hmm.
That it will be next year in Australia.
So the International Federation of Dental Hygienists holds a meeting, and it's every couple of years. And the scientific symposium will be held August 15th to 17th in Brisbane, Australia. And as part of that, one of the things that I wanted to put a plug in for is the Sunstar World Dental Hygienist Awards. And the perfect segue is to honor dental hygienists who have been remarkable. And one of the things that I really enjoy about this award is that it gives the opportunity to showcase several outstanding dental hygienists, and not just our colleagues, but there's an opportunity to acknowledge and showcase dental hygiene students as well. So I wanted to share with you that there is the opportunity to apply for these awards all the way from now until January 14th, 2019. And so if you go on the Sunstar Foundation website, it's www.sunstarfoundation.org/awards. You can look up World Dental Hygienist Awards, and you'll see how to apply. And there's four different categories, two for our dental hygiene colleagues who've already graduated from school and are out in practice, and two for students. So there's a research category for hygienists and for students, and there's an activity/project category. And that's for professionals and for students. And so for hygienists who have conducted original research but have not published it, or for students who've also been involved in a research project, you can write a paper as if you were writing to publish in a journal, and but have not published that paper yet, but you would write it up, and you could submit that for the research category. But if you are someone who has done a special project to support the community or patients or the general public, and you want to write that up as well, you can be eligible for one of the awards. And I know, Andrew and Michelle, you both have done very special projects and could be eligible for these awards. And there are many dental hygiene educators who work with students and help them do activities that support patients and the community. And these are the kinds of things we are looking for to be submitted for these awards. We want to honor all of the hygienists and students who do these incredible projects. And so you will see, if you read the award descriptions, there are some really special prizes associated with this. There are monetary awards that go from $2,000 to $5,000 for these awards, plus Mayumi Kaneda, who's in charge of the Sunstar Foundation, will provide travel for the winners to go to Brisbane to participate in the International Symposium on Dental Hygiene, and you will be, the winners will be presented with their checks at the symposium and will be honored there. So I want everyone to know they are eligible for these awards, unless you've received one already and then you're not eligible for the award. But we want everyone to think about, you know, don't say my project won't count. Look at the award criteria. Think about writing up a paper and submitting it. One of the really nice things about this is, you know, you can submit your application, and the chair of the award committee will review it. And if you're missing something, like it says you have to submit a CV and a copy of your license, and if you forget to submit your a copy of your license, the chair will look over your application and send you a quick email and say, oops, you forgot something. Hurry up and send that in. And so that we want you to qualify. We don't want you to be ineligible because of a small mishap somewhere. We want everyone to be eligible. And everyone will work with you to make sure that your entry is considered eligible. So think about those kinds of things, and don't say, I can't do it, or it's too hard. If you're a student, work with a faculty mentor, and gosh, it's July, for heaven's sakes. You have August, September, October, November, December, plenty of time to get this application in and get a paper written and submitted. So I really want everyone to think about what a great opportunity this is. Some of the money that is part of the prize actually goes to the dental hygiene school, and some goes right to the award winner. And again, you get to travel, your registration to the meeting is paid for. All of these things are really, you know, just wonderful opportunities for somebody who would be selected to be an award winner. So there's an independent selection committee that will read every entry and pick the award winners. It's really an exciting and wonderful opportunity.
How many winners are there normally?
So there are four opportunities, one in the research category for a dental hygiene professional, one in the activity project category for a professional, one for the student in the research category, and one for the student activity. But last time in 2016, we actually had a tie for the research category. So we went to Mayumi Kaneda and said, will you accept a tie? And she did. So you can have more than, you know, one sometimes when it turns out that way. The papers are so outstanding, and the projects are just so inspiring that when the committee read them, we actually sent comments back to many of the individuals who submitted papers saying, please consider publishing your paper, even if you weren't selected to be an award winner, because we could only give one in each category.
Yeah.
And we had so many outstanding papers, and many of the papers in the course of the last year and a half or so have, in fact, been published.
That's awesome.
That's so cool.
They really, really are inspiring papers. They truly were amazing to review. And that's why I asked, could we talk about it? Because I don't want someone to say, well, I've just done such a small project, or maybe my research isn't that important. It's all important. It's all valuable. And I wouldn't want you to miss an opportunity to be considered for this prestigious award, because you might be the next Sunstar World Dental Hygienist Award winner.
Do you remember what some of the winners, like what their topics were?
So, I will give you some examples, but you also can go on the website, and it showcases each of the award winners. So, one of the award winners did a research topic on ergonomics, and she was one of the winners for 2016, and she was tied with another person who did a more scientific study. And I don't remember the exact name of her study, so I don't want to mess it up right now, and she'll kill me for not having looked it up, which I should have done. And then one of the project winners started a school in Bolivia where she worked with underprivileged women and got them interested in going to school and becoming dental hygienists. So she actually created a dental hygiene program.
What?
And wow. Got them to, they had to sign a contract to say they would not become pregnant while they were in school. And they would commit to coming to school and providing oral health care and learning dental hygiene.
Yeah, we need that name so we can have her on the podcast. That's amazing.
You would want her on the podcast, and she's listed right under there. You can look her up. And what was so amazing is, first of all, she does this presentation. There is not a dry eye in the room.
No, I can't imagine.
And she, while we're there, because we're all in Switzerland at the meeting, because we did a workshop where they, all three winners, did their presentations. And so I asked, do you need donations? Because you know how we have the exhibitors and everybody goes around and fills their bags mm-hmm. with more things than they really need.
Yep.
And so we asked what hotel she was staying at, and people made donations right then and there at the meeting
wow.
to her program. So she had far more going home than she ever imagined. From
wow.
when she came to the meeting, because we loved her. I mean, you could not help but fall in love with her and what she was doing. And in a million years, I never would have thought to do the things that she did. She and her husband actually relocated there and adopted two children.
Oh, very nice.
While they've been there. And the things she has done make you think, I think I'm a fairly good person, but I'm nothing for her. What she's done has been absolutely amazing, literally changing the lives of so many people. And one of the women who started there actually went on and became a dentist and came back and is a supervising dentist in the program. I mean, unbelievable things that has happened because of her and the work that she has done.
That's so
just
great. So
phenomenal.
Good.
Man, you wish you could make a mark like that in the world. Like,
but the thing is, people have made so many marks in so many ways. And, you know, yes, she was exceptional, but there are so many exceptional moments. And I have met unbelievably exceptional people, yourselves included. And that's, I think, the individuals who need to be writing up something and sharing that. And we want to showcase these individuals and share their work and award them and reward them. And by the way, there are other awards programs on the IFDH website where, once again, individuals have a chance to have some money to continue their work. And, you know, this is one vehicle for that, and there are others. And I really hope that everyone takes an opportunity to look at these as ways to continue their work, not just to get the award, but to have some funding to continue their work, because, you know, you are getting some monetary benefit from this. And if this is your heart's desire, you'll probably want to continue your work.
For sure.
Well, that sounds amazing. And I hope everyone feels extremely inspired by all of your empowering thoughts tonight and this hygiene diagnosis. It's not new, but it's definitely maybe a refresher, hopefully. And if you have been applying it, I think it was probably a validating podcast for you as well. But thank you so much, Joanne, for taking the time and giving us your knowledge tonight.
Well, thank you, Michelle and Andrew, for giving me an opportunity to share some thoughts with you. As always, it's a pleasure to work with both of you and to have an opportunity to share some thoughts. I really appreciate it.
You're welcome. Thank you. Anytime you want to come back.
Thank you.
It's about that time. Grab your blanket and a glass of wine. It's story time with Michelle.
So story time with Michelle in honor of Joanne Gerinlian, Dr. Joanne Gerinlian. I wanted to give to you an article that she wrote on hygiene diagnosis with a Darlene Swigert. And this is from 2015, Dimensions of Dental Hygiene, titled Implementing Dental Hygiene Diagnosis into Practice. Dental hygienists work with patients in a variety of clinical environments. The American Dental Hygienist Association established the dental hygiene process of care to ensure that every patient is evaluated and treated as an individual with unique oral health needs. While dental hygiene diagnosis is an essential part of dental hygiene care, confusion exists on how to implement it into daily practice. In 2015, the ADHA defined dental hygiene diagnosis as the identification of an individual's health behaviors, attitudes, and oral health care needs for which a dental hygienist is educationally qualified and licensed to provide. Critical thinking skills are necessary to evaluate assessment data, identify a dental hygiene diagnosis, and formulate a dental hygiene care plan. Care plans must include prevention and treatment strategies. In addition, the Commission on Dental Accreditation defines dental hygiene diagnosis as the identification of an existing or potential oral health problem that a dental hygienist is qualified and licensed to treat. Collaboration with a dentist ensures the incorporation of the dental hygiene care plan into the patient's overall oral health care plan. Dentistry involves a team approach requiring each member of the team to apply his or her expertise on the patient's behalf. Dentists rely on dental hygienists to be the experts in preventive care. Dental hygienists are educated to identify the signs and symptoms of oral disease as well as the etiology. The purpose of dental hygiene diagnosis is to evaluate the individual dental hygiene needs of a patient after conducting a thorough examination and risk assessment. Dental hygiene diagnosis is a necessary component of patient care. Once a dental hygiene diagnosis has been recognized, the patient's individualized dental hygiene care plan can be developed and implemented. The American Dental Education Association, ADEA, approved entry level competencies for dental hygienists based on the ADHA's process of care published in 2008. These competencies require that dental hygiene graduates be able to assess, diagnose, plan, implement, and evaluate treatment. The most important reason to acknowledge a dental hygiene diagnosis during patient care, however, is to provide the best advice, education, prevention strategies, self-care recommendations, treatment, and evaluation protocols possible. Discussing the dental hygiene diagnosis with patients creates the space for a dialogue between the patient and the dental hygienist. Sorry, I lost my place because I looked up. Discussing the dental hygiene diagnosis with patients creates the space for dialogue between the patient and the dental hygienist regarding the oral health conditions, risk, and prevention. The United States Department of Health and Human Services, in its nationwide initiative to improve the health of Americans, Healthy People 2020, recognized two needs that can be addressed specifically by dental hygienists during a discussion of the dental hygiene diagnosis. These include raising awareness about the importance of oral hygiene and its relationship to overall health, and encouraging the acceptance and adoption of preventive measures to improve oral health. The ultimate goal is to improve oral health outcomes among all patients by inviting them to partner with dental hygienists during the process. And then there's a table. I welcome you guys or encourage you also to go read the rest of this article. But in conclusion, the dental hygiene diagnosis is an adjunct to the dental diagnosis and emphasizes the skills and professionalism required of all dental team members. Translational healthcare involves researchers, clinicians, and educators working collaboratively in order to improve overall patient health outcomes. And in oral health, this interdisciplinary effort includes dentists, dental hygienists, dental assistants, nutritionists, physicians, and other allied health professionals, incorporating specific expertise in order to promote optimal health. One key responsibility in dental hygiene practice is to develop a dental hygiene diagnosis and care plan that is integrated into the larger healthcare system. The interweaving of oral health and general health is undeniable, as is the importance of patients partnering with healthcare professionals to improve systemic health. Helping patients envision the whole picture of individual oral health is an essential aspect of dental hygiene diagnosis. Dental hygienists are in a unique position as they get to spend quality time with patients, fostering relationships and building trust. As the trust develops, acceptance of education and treatment recommendations will also grow. So thank you, Darlene and Joanne, for giving us the power to create a hygiene dental hygienist diagnosis. Love it.
Yep.
Yep. So,
I had a whole thing about how I want to piggyback on it, and I'm just like, you know what? I can't add to that.
She did such a good job. It was perfect. A wonderful article. So, reach out to Joanne if you have any questions. She is just a wealth of knowledge and the most encouraging person. I mean, I'll be very honest, like 10 years ago, if you told me I was like going to be chatting with Joanne Greenlee, and I'd be like, let me add Tom Cruise into that too. Like as if that's ever going to happen, but she's
a thing for Tom Cruise.
No, I'm just throwing out some name. I'm good.
Okay. Anyways, I get what you're saying. Sorry. Starstruck.
So she's a wealth of knowledge, incredibly encouraging, and she's open door all the time with her. She's wonderful. So reach out to her, and then also go check out our Facebook page, Instagram page, our website, ataleoftwohygienists.com, and review us on iTunes. Thank you again last week to Melissa, who gave us our last review. We are always in need of those because any review on iTunes gives us more exposure within iTunes. So we appreciate you for doing that. Anything else, friend?
You'll see us. We'll edit that part out.
I forgot who I was talking to.
We'll be in a few weeks. We'll be at Indigo. It's just, I mean, it's like what, 4 weeks away or 5 weeks away, yeah, or something like that. It's really close. So, hope to see you all there. If you haven't made plans, go ahead and make plans for that right away. It'll be great. That's a great conference. I'm very excited for all the amazing people that'll be there. So don't forget to see us there.
Yep. And we hope everyone has a great week, and we will see you or talk to you soon.
Bye, everyone.
Bye, y'all.
Do you ever watch like some of those old sitcoms?
Not like, it's been like maybe Friends. Schitt's Creek is my jam.
That's the stupidest thing ever.
Have you not seen Schitt's Creek? Oh my God. I could watch David all day, every day. All day, every day. He's my people.
It was too frustrating how dysfunctional the family was. And that hurts me.
It made me love it so much more.
It doesn't make you cringe the whole time you're watching it?
Not even a little bit. It makes me laugh hysterically. Hysterically. Like, I've probably watched all episodes 4 times each.
Oh my gosh. How many seasons is it? How many seasons?
4.
Yeah, okay. Are they still making them, or are they done with it?
Oh, I don't know.
Because I feel like that comes up regularly. Like, hey, you'd like this based on all the other things you watch. I'm like, you guys are way off. Picture algorithm Netflix.
I bought the 4th season because I couldn't wait for it to come out.
You're so stupid, Michelle.
You are the only person I've ever known to say that they did not like that.
On your recommendation, I'll try it again, but I don't think I'm going to like it.
Which season did you watch?
The first one, just like the very beginning when like the family has to go back. Oh, well, they lose all their money, so much better. They go to the cabin or whatever, and I'm like,
I don't like. Oh, I don't like the daughter.
So much better.
She's too like prissy, high maintenance. Like, oh man, I just want to punch her. Anyway,
oh, you got to watch. Like, just go into like the mid second season. You don't just even jump need to, in. Like,
okay. Yeah. All right, I'll try it. Allison and I will watch it. See what she's. See what she thinks.
You ready? I'll leave it in. I just have so much to do.
That's not how we do things, but yeah, I mean, if you're saying we just need, okay, go ahead.
What do you mean it's not how we do? Meaning normally we have to always pawn lead it in off the on episode.
I always lead in the episode. You always you, lead into the, I
always
the
is
interview.
Way no, always.
Let's like 9 times out of 10, I always start the actual episode, unless you do like the, what you're doing now and throwing a fit.
I don't and then care you to always, start in.
And then you always bring in the guest. Like, that's how it goes.
I actually am going to make a point now to listen to all the times and tally when you've okay. let it
I'll
in
tell you
when
what,
I have.
I will do that since you're so busy today. And you apparently have way too many things to do. And I'll do it for you.
I'm building an empire over here.
Whatever. An evil empire. All right.